This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, we preview the highly contested Kenyan presidential elections slated for August 9. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Nairobi-based reporter Juma Maganga tells VOA that past elections in Kenya have been marred by deadly violence. The most notorious incident happened in the aftermath of the disputed 2007 elections, in which more than 1,100 people were killed in riots and attacks. Maganga reports that the Kenyan police have been accused of using excessive force in handling past election-related protests. However, this year, the police intend to provide a more secure environment for voting, indicating that steps have been taken, such as election security training and additional equipment for officers. According to the Brookings Institution, a Washington-based think tank, the August 9 vote is expected to be the most tightly contested in Kenya's recent history. Political tensions are rising, given that Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has shifted his support from Deputy President William Ruto to former Prime Minister Raila Odinga. So what's at stake in Kenya's election, and why does it matter, not only for Kenya, but for the stability of the East Africa region and future of democracy in Africa? Well, for more on what to watch in the upcoming Kenyan elections and why they are significant, we turn to two distinguished analysts. Matthew Karotanuto is professor of history at St. Lawrence University and incoming associate dean of international and intercultural studies. St. Lawrence University is located in the state of New York. And Michael Wairungu, he is assistant director of student life and academic instruction at the St. Lawrence University Kenya Semester Program. Well, Matthew Karotanuto joins us from New York, and Michael Wairungu joins us from Nairobi. Matthew, welcome to you.
Carol, thanks for having us.
You bet. Michael, thanks for joining us from Nairobi.
Thank you, Carol, for having me as well as Matt.
Well, let me start with Matthew. Matthew, let's start with the very basic question. What is at stake in these elections? Kenya is a powerhouse in the region. And as I said, and you know very well, violence has wracked past elections. So what would you say is fundamentally at stake? And are there any concerns about violence this year?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. Of course, as you mentioned, Kenya is still the sort of center of economic and political power in East Africa. And it's an important bellwether, I think, for thinking about the growth of democracy throughout the region. There's been a lot of progress in Kenya since the end of one-party rule in the early 1990s. But as you said before, that's been marred by at least three election cycles in 1992, 1997, and then most notably in 2007, 2008, in terms of a high level of political violence. And so certainly analysts and Kenyans are watching on the ground whether 2022 is going to also have a return to that. I think a lot of us are thinking that there's less likely a chance to go back to the levels we saw in 1992, 97, and 2007, mostly because the presidential election is not a winner-take-all event anymore. In 2010, Kenya passed a new constitution, and this will be the third time Kenyans are not just voting for the president, but a whole slate of positions from the county level up that have really devolved power from the central government and put it more in the hands of local officials. And I think that has some potential for local level violence and issues, but also the questions just less at stake at the presidential level.
Matthew, thank you for that terrific overview. And now I'd like to turn to Michael Wairungu. With your finger on the pulse on the ground in Nairobi, Michael, what would you add or subtract from that overview of what is fundamentally at stake for Kenya this year and the region writ large?
Thank you so much, Carol, again for having us. And thank you, Matt, for those very good insights. I think there are several things I would like to add about this election. Unlike before, as Matt said, we are doing the election with a new constitution, but we are also seeing a new pattern in terms of things that matter. Previously, elections in Kenya were described as ethnically driven, but this time we are seeing a combination of both because there is a continuation of ethnic patterns where we are fighting between ethnicity and regionalism. But we are also seeing some other issue-based politics. Like now, if you look at one of the candidates, Raila Odinga selected Martha Karua. And Martha Karua is a very well-known defender of law and justice. She is not an ordinary woman. And therefore, at a broader scale, we can say gender issues will play a big factor in this election. The other thing is Kenya has not been doing well economically. So from an internal point of view, we are seeing candidates talking about economic blueprints that is going to improve the Kenyan economy. And finally, I think we can say we are seeing the issue of youth. Youth a significant factor or constituency in this election. But interestingly, the definition of youth this time is not about age, but speaking the language that will touch to their needs.
Michael, thank you for those terrific insights. And we're going to pick up on those. Back to you, Matthew Carnuto. So, Matthew, let's talk about the main contenders, William Ruto, deputy president, and of course, Raila Odinga, the opposition leader, and his female running mate, to whom Michael made reference. What does each side stand for? And also, I'm curious to know why incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta threw his support to Raila Odinga as opposed to his deputy, William Ruto.
Yeah, maybe I'll start there. I mean, I think if you've studied Kenyan politics for a long time, you notice that the main contenders have an intertwined history. So we remember actually in 2007, William Ruto actually was on the side of Raila Odinga and then switched to Uhuru Kenyatta in 2013 and 2017. There's been a lot of speculation over why the split between Ruto and Kenyatta happened back in really 2018 with the famous handshake, as Kenyans talk about. And a lot of it's about thinking about how Uhuru Kenyatta is sort of protecting his legacy moving forward and potentially playing a role in the government, not as president, but in some other official capacity or other ways in a Raila Odinga government. In terms of Raila Odinga, right, he is the son of the first vice president. It's the fifth time he's contesting the presidency. So he is a longtime member of the opposition, although this time with his collaboration with the current president, he's seen as almost a incumbent running on that platform. If we think about the difference between the two, I think both of them are trying to distance themselves from the central government. They're almost both trying to claim as outsider status. So William Ruto is running on this sort of economic populism where he claims he's the self-made entrepreneur, the hustler nation, and he's going to be the champion of the everyday average Kenyan, where Raila Odinga is trying to run on a platform as a reformer, particularly with picking Martha Karua as his running mate. So in thinking about this, this is an important question, sort of what moving forward, who is being perceived as the insider versus the outsider, and who is going to be perceived as giving the best chance for the everyday average Kenyan to prosper economically, as well as the questions of corruption and reform. I think these are all key issues that Kenyans are thinking about as they make their choice for the August 9th polls.
Terrific, Matthew. Now I'd like to turn to Michael Wairungu. Michael, to answer the same question in terms of why incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta threw his support to Raila as opposed to Deputy Ruto, and the significance of Raila Odinga's running mate, as you said, Martha Karua, to what extent that is an important factor, and really, what does each side stand for? How do they differ philosophically?
Thank you so much, Carol. First of all, I would like to start by echoing the issues that Matt has highlighted. Those are the issues that are on the ground. They are the ones that are going to shape this election. But now I would want to respond to the question of Uhuru supporting Raila in a slightly different view, in that there are two possible things. One, we can talk about the characteristic politics of betrayal that have characterized post-independence Kenya. If you can recall, immediately after independence, the founding president, Jomo Kenyatta, was deputized by Oginga Odinga. And it's interesting that Uhuru Kenyatta is the son of the founding father or founding president, and Raila is the son of the first deputy president. Then, fast forward, look at what happened in 2002 when Kibaki, the third president, came to power. He had struck a deal with Raila Odinga that first support me, once we get to power, I will leave the seat for you. But that never happened. Fast forward, in 2013, we see Uhuru and Ruto striking a similar deal. And I remember Uhuru is on record saying, I rule for 10 years, and after 10 years, I will leave the seat for you for the next 10 years. But along the way, that didn't happen, because what I would say is political interests of presidential contenders change between the time they are campaigning and when they get to power. Then from another perspective, we can interpret Uhuru's support for Raila in terms of expanded democratic space that Kenya has witnessed since the promulgation of the new constitution. Actually, one thing that I would say has happened in Kenya's democratic space is that now people are free to make decisions, unlike before where people felt like they were political captives. So those are two ways of looking at Raila's support from Uhuru. Then philosophically, I think I would say Raila, yes, he projects himself as a reformer and a people's person. So we may not be able to draw a very big distinction between Raila and Ruto, only that we can say that Raila historically is a reformer and Ruto is projecting himself as a people's person through his hustler dynasty narrative or the bottom-up approach of the economic reform. The question about Martha Karua is very interesting. Martha Karua is not an ordinary woman, and her selection as the deputy president is also coinciding with the expanded democratic space that we are witnessing and with the women empowerment in the political arena. It's not just Martha Karua who has been elevated into such an influential position of power. We also have the first chief justice. She is a woman, Madam Martha Koome. And we also have her deputy, that is deputy chief justice. She is a woman. So that's why I was saying that this election is unique, not only because of election of Martha Karua as a defender of rights and law, but she's also a woman. And we are seeing that pattern being reproduced in other counties. We also have several other governors who are women. So I can say, yes, entry of Martha Karua is a game changer in this year's election.
Yes, we see women are on the rise in Kenya. We'll be back in just a moment. But first, you are listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Joining me via Microsoft Teams, Matthew Carotenuto, he's professor of history at St. Lawrence University in the state of New York, and Michael Wairungu, he's assistant director of student life and academic instruction at the St. Lawrence University Kenya Semester Program. He joins us from Nairobi. We are previewing the much anticipated Kenyan elections in early August. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on our website at voaafrica.com/encounter. You may also find it on most of your favorite podcast apps. You can follow us on Twitter at @Carol_Castiel or connect with us on Facebook at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now here's a shout out to a new Facebook follower, Khaled Fadl, who we believe is from Kuwait. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com and tell us how you listen and where you are from. You may also write us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Well, back to our show. And Matthew, let me turn back to you. Let's take a look at the horse race. Do we have a sense right now, a month out from the elections, who is leading, whether it's Raila and his running mate or William Ruto?
Yeah, it's very a tightly contested race, and it comes into a couple of things. First of all, we have opinion polling data, not 100% complete, not every week like we do in other parts of the world. But a couple of key trends that are happening in the opinion polls is that originally William Ruto was ahead. That seems to have been tightened, if not Raila Odinga leading very slightly, although it's probably a statistical anomaly at that point. But more importantly, the latest opinion polls are suggesting that even at this point, less than a month out, there could be as much as 20 to 25% of the Kenyan population who is undecided. So there is going to be a lot at stake over the next weeks as we run up to the election in thinking about this. And in thinking about terms of who might be ahead and how Kenyan voting patterns are, a couple of trends that are also really important to think about is that Kenyans tend to vote in blocks, right? So there are going to be very strategic strongholds that each candidate might get 85, 90% of the vote in various counties. And then what we're going to be really having to watch closely are the battleground counties. So the central part of the country, a few other outlying counties, these are the places where the campaigning will be the most hotly contested. And they're the places that we worry about instability with that really hotly contested vote.
Turning to you, Michael Wairungu, for the same question. Anything to add or subtract with respect to the so-called horse race? And a related question with regard to William Ruto. Don't forget, our listeners, that he was indicted by the ICC for the 2007-2008 election violence. And so, Michael, I wanted to know, to what extent is that a factor or not in looking at him as a candidate by voters?
Yes. Thank you, Carol. Let me start by commenting on the two horse race description of the current election. I think this language has been used for as long as I can remember. There is a tendency to dichotomize Kenya's elections by only foregrounding the leading candidates. Okay. At the moment, it's Raila and Ruto who are being referred as the two horses. However, I think we need to pay attention to the third candidate, Professor Wajakoya of the Roots Party, because his rating has been rising on a daily basis because he is using what I would call the language of liberation. He is promoting the growing of weed. And when he was analyzing his manifesto, he is saying things that would appear crazy, but they are resonating so well with the youth. And the youth, as we speak, are being drawn from DP Ruto, because previously they were his main constituency. But now with the rise of Wajakoya, we are seeing Ruto losing the grip of the youth. Wajakoya may not win in the long run, but the reason as to why I say we should not ignore him is because he might push for a relan. As you know, constitutionally, for the candidate to be declared the winner, he or she has to garner 50 plus one votes. Following the pause that Matt referenced, no one among the two leading candidates has secured that. For the ICC issue, yes. If you look at Ruto, he was indicted in 2007, 2008, and he was humiliated a lot. And given that he is younger than Raila, he has a lot at stake. He cannot afford again to be associated with violence. So I see him acting according to the law, so that in case he loses, he will go to the Supreme Court, so that he can also appeal to the future voters. Finally, in terms of gender and class, the entry of Martha Karua is likely not only to appeal to women in general, but there is this middle and upper class category of women who rarely vote. And I can see them voting this year because they feel like they can associate more with Martha Karua than any other candidate.
Thank you, Michael. Now back to Matthew. So Matthew, both of you have indicated that notwithstanding past elections have been more ethnic driven, that there are more issues at stake. There are constituencies like women and youth who are playing a greater role. So what is the ratio of ethnic identity to issues-based motivations in this particular election? And if this one is likely to be more issues-based, what are those big issues driving the voters?
Yeah, so previously, when we think about Kenyan election politics, often it's just referred to as a game of ethnic arithmetic, whereas certainly the current coalitions have regional voting blocks that they're hoping to turn out in large numbers. But both of those regional voting blocks, both of the coalitions, are very diverse in terms of culturally, regionally, throughout the country. So we are seeing a sort of large-scale coalition building across ethnic lines throughout Kenya. Ethnicity is certainly going to play a role when it comes to people's voting patterns, as it has strategically. But the message has been mostly about economic populism and economic issues, right? We have very high rates of inflation right now. Certainly the COVID-19 pandemic has racked Kenya's economy as it has much of the world. We have rising fuel prices as a result of the war in Ukraine and other issues, right? These are the things that are affecting the average Kenyan voter. And so I think that this may be one of the first elections where we start to see a real visible break potentially between pure ethnic voting blocks, with people who are thinking about issues that relate more to basic household necessities, basic living expenses. Beyond the presidential race, I think one of the other things that we really need to look into is the county level. So since 2010, in 2013 and 2017, the last two national election cycles, we've seen Kenyans vote for positions like governor for the first time, members of county assemblies. These institutions are relatively new in Kenya, and people are holding politicians more accountable. And we're seeing a lot of people that are not at the presidential race moving to those positions, particularly governors, because they have a lot of power at the local level. So I think Kenyans are also going to be holding people accountable for local development concerns, local issues, much more so with the new county system that was put into place after 2010.
Thank you, Matthew. Turning to you, Michael, for your take on what is motivating Kenyan voters this year. Is it less ethnic driven and more issues driven? And I'd love you to comment on these local elections. You know, how important will they be?
Thank you so much, Carol. I think Matt highlighted most of the issues that are driving this election. But I would like to add the issue of devolution this time is going to play more significance than before. If we look at the constitution of the two main political outfits, they are very hybrid. And unlike before, where the political contenders would push other candidates who are vying through their parties to observe like a six-piece, like uniformity right from the bottom all the way to the presidency, this time is proving very hard. Because what has happened is that parties have also learned a lesson that the moment they are told to come together, dissolve and form a coalition, that is when their currency ends. So what they are doing here is maintaining their autonomy as individual parties, but promise to support the presidential contender of that coalition. So now, with that hybridity, there will be many issues, some of which will be regional. The same thing with Raila. Raila has tried presidency for five times. I would say with some certainty that this might be his last particular try. And therefore, he is going to play safe. He is going to project himself as a reformer of all time, so that in case he wins, he will go into the books of history as somebody who died for his nation and at the end got an opportunity to deliver his nation to where he had promised. If he doesn't win, he will still go back in history as somebody who fought for his country and still fought for it to the bitter end.
Back to you, Matthew, with the few minutes we have left. We talked about Kenya's role in the region. It's a powerhouse, and U.S. interests in Kenya and the region and its partnership. What are U.S. strategic interests, and do you think they will be served no matter who prevails in the election?
Yeah, I think the U.S. is not playing an active role in supporting one candidate or the other. They want Kenyans to decide, but they certainly want a strategic partner in whoever takes over, particularly in terms of counterterrorism and regional security questions with the Horn of Africa and Somalia in particular. I think this is a big issue kind of moving forward. Kenya has been a partner of the United States for quite some time. And also, right, our listeners probably know that Kenya has been involved militarily in Somalia since 2011. And so that is a silent question that either candidate hasn't taken a strong opinion on, whether they want to continue to risk the lives of Kenyan soldiers in a cross-border issue, or whether they're going to kind of claim to really end that occupation of southern Somalia and incursion in that way. In terms of the region overall, I think this is an important moment for East Africa to see how we have elections that are hopefully coming up in South Sudan. We have growing authoritarianism in Rwanda and Uganda, hopefully a peaceful solution to a longstanding civil war happening in Ethiopia. So it's an important moment, I think, regionally for thinking about democracy. And it's really going to be how Kenyans feel the election went in terms of whether it was free and fair, and whether Kenyan institutions, most notably the judiciary, are seen as the sort of peaceful arbitrators of that election, right? We'll remember back in 2017 when the Kenyan Supreme Court was the first African Supreme Court to ever overturn a national election. That was widely celebrated. And I think Kenyans are going to be watching for institutions to back up peaceful protests or complaints about the election or irregularities in ways that will avoid violence.
Michael Wairungu, you get the last word on that very big question about what's at stake, not just for Kenya, but for the region.
Thank you so much, Carol. I think Kenya, from a geopolitical point of view, is strategically positioned in the region, and therefore peace in Kenya is peace for the wider region. And to a great extent, it's peace for the U.S. I say that because if you look at the UN, it has the main office in Africa, in Nairobi. So there is so much connections that are there between Kenya and the UN and the various agencies like UNEP, whose educators are also in Nairobi. And therefore, such organizations may wish that Kenya have a peaceful election. Then, in terms of trade, Kenya is an economic gateway to many landlocked countries like Uganda, Southern Sudan, and the like. And therefore, if we have peaceful elections, that will mean a lot economically to the neighbors. From a political point of view, I have seen political candidates in Kenya seek some kind of inspiration from neighbors in the region, like Ruto go to visit Museveni. I saw Raila go all the way to South Africa and also to Tanzania to seek inspiration from Magufuli, meaning that behind the curtain conversations indicate how much political significance Kenya has to the region. Then, if you look at the previous elections, our neighbors had a lot to learn from the political crisis that we have had, especially in 2007. I remember in the social media, there were all those discussions from Africans of different nationalities like, hey, we need to learn from what happened in Kenya. They almost got into a genocide similar to what happened in Rwanda. So the lessons are coming from both positive and negative perspectives. Then at the international level, Kenya is a migration processing center. Most of the refugees are housed in Kenya, refugees from the region, some are as far as Congo, others Ethiopia and Somalia. Therefore, peace for Kenya means peace for the region and also some hope for those countries that have been at war. Finally, we are having elections at a time when we have COVID pandemic. And right now, as we speak, there is a new spike. So in case the country goes to any form of crisis and we have this fluid movement of people across the border, that means the spread of COVID-19. Therefore, it is our wish that we are going to have a peaceful election so that we can ensure the stability of the region.
All eyes on Kenya in the coming weeks as ballots are cast. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Matthew Karutanuto. He's professor of history at St. Lawrence University in the state of New York, and Michael Wairungu, assistant director of student life and academic instruction at the St. Lawrence University Kenya Semester Program. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your excellent insights. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.